feeding cattle or sheep, the Asparagopsis have consistently shown reductions of over 80%, which is just extraordinary.
Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, the show where I talk to lots of different folks about innovative ways to better feed the world. Food Fixers! Can I call you Food Fixers? I'm going to call you Food Fixers. I am gassed for this episode, and that pun will make sense in a moment when I tell you what it's about. But first, I'm going to prep you with some knowledge about livestock farming, greenhouse gases, and burps. Okay. Worldwide, agriculture contributes to 12% of greenhouse gas emissions. Cattle are the number one emitter in that category, producing enteric methane, which translates to cow burps. And while methane has a shorter lifespan and smaller presence in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, it's capable of trapping more heat, making it worse than CO2 for 20 years after it's released. To really simplify it, on average, one cow is equivalent to one gas-powered car in its greenhouse gas emissions. India currently houses the most cows with just over 300 million. So clearly, we have to fix these bovine gas issues. But you may be surprised by the solution that's been found. Today's conversation is with Cassandra Kelly from Future Feed, a company that sells the license to grow a type of seaweed that essentially acts as a Tums for cows and other livestock.
Hi, my name's Cassandra Kelly. I am the chair of Future Feed. I live in New York and pleased to be here.
What is Future Feed?
It's actually a great question, as I ask myself so often, you know, when people ask you what it is or what we do. And I think given that we're just sort of not growing just a business and we're also trying to build an entire global industry, I think less on sort of what we are. I spend a lot more time thinking about what is the problem we're actually trying to solve and what part we play in that. You know, at the simplest, we are a company that seeks to really dramatically reduce methane emissions from livestock and do this by adding a small amount of a red seaweed called Asparagopsis to the diet of these animals. And we've proven that this is safe and consistently effective.
An Asparagopsis, which is, first of all, such a fun word to say. Asparagopsis is seaweed.
That's absolutely right. It's a type of a seaweed. Not the ones that in the Caribbean, there's lots of complaints about a lot of brown seaweed on the shore. It's not that type, but it is a red seaweed. The genus is, indeed, it is Asparagopsis, and very fun to say.
And so that is then implemented into the feed of livestock. How much of it is given to livestock and what measurable effects does it have?
I believe it's something like 5 grams of a freeze-dried Asparagopsis per kilo of dry matter intake is all that is required. And that can be given to the animal now in both in freeze-dried, as we just said, or in oil.
Okay. And so when that animal consumes that small portion of Asparagopsis within their regular feed, they have been shown to produce less methane?
Absolutely. The what we call in vivo trials, it's feeding cattle or sheep, the Asparagopsis have consistently shown reductions of over 80%, which is just extraordinary. Most seaweeds, other seaweeds or other ingredient, you know, feed additives at this point in time haven't shown much more than 10 to 40%. And even with some of those, if it's in the seaweed variety, you'd have to feed the animal an enormously greater volume of seaweed, which to them would be unpalatable. So this really is a remarkable discovery.
Alrighty, just sprinkle a little seaweed in their food and boom, cow burps are no longer catastrophic to the environment. Though I'm still wondering how the science of this was even discovered. Let's hear that story because it is a good one.
Our chief scientist at FutureFeed, his name is Dr. Rob Kinley, is one of the pioneers in this field. And I think it was back in 2007 where he has what he calls his light bulb moment. He's Canadian, he's working at a Canadian university, and he meets a local farmer who's noticed that dairy cattle that have a beachfront view, you know, location, 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 with beachfront access, they were eating seaweed that had been washed up on the shore, I'm assuming from storms. And these seaweed indulging cows were more productive than other cows. They were healthier and they were easier to manage. And so, you know, in a entrepreneurial way, the farmer says, you know, I want to make a commercial venture of it, but I know I'm going to need testing. So Dr. Kinley, can I get you involved? And Dr. Kinley obliges. And then this is where he then comes to make his discovery that alongside these other observed benefits from this farmer, they are actually emitting significantly less methane. And then from there, they feel, you know, as is the wonderful story of research and global collaboration, there was a global search undertaken for a seaweed, you know, which seaweed would give the greatest bang for our buck, you know, which one would really have the greatest methane busting potential. And so the science organization, the Australian Commonwealth one called CSIRO, James Cook University and Meat and Livestock Australia, joined together with Dr. Kinley, and they tested, I think, over 30 types of seaweed. And that's where, you know, one day, so the story goes, Dr. Kinley was looking at his equipment and thought it had malfunctioned, you know, having tested some, you know, 30 types and finding that this one genus called Asparagopsis demonstrated up to 100% elimination of methane. And so that was, as you might imagine, incredibly exciting moment. And then, of course, you must continue to do all the research to make sure that the benefits doesn't create any harm to the cow or to the person who might consume its meat or dairy afterwards. And so indeed, that is the story of it, which is, you know, is where we've got to, you know, years later. But I love the idea that these cows by the seaside and a farmer has led to this incredible subsequent global discovery. So very exciting.
Oh, that is so cool. Move over, Sally selling seashells. Now we have Canadian cows consuming seaweed by the seashore.
And so in effect, seaweed, just so you know, has each, you know, all seaweed has an anti-methanogenic sort of bioactive in a bromoform. And this disrupts the process of methane production in a cow's rumen, which is what the rumen in a cow is one of the four stomach compartments. And it's particularly effective, Asparagopsis, because it stores the bioactive in its gland cells. And that reduces the cow's burping, which reduces the emissions.
Cassandra says that through their research, they've found cows are easily able to consume Asparagopsis because it's added in such a small dosage along with their food. They also found no difference in the milk produced or the actual meat. And there's some early studies seeing weight gain in the cows, which is beneficial because cows use a lot of energy up when they burp. Who knew?
So where is Asparagopsis grown?
So we currently have 9 licensees. So we own the patent of the technology, and we have 9 licensees around the world, and they're currently based in Australia, Canada, Hawaii, New Zealand, and Sweden. And there are various places that are growing Asparagopsis and in different ways, whether it is onshore or in natural waters.
So you are actually feeding to the cows and the livestock and right now? Okay.
Oh, that's, well, yes. Good. So we already do. So yes, in Australia, we have already got some of the licensees have struck commercial deals with brands that you may have heard of. Recently, a regarded burger chain in Australia called Grilled is now selling burgers with the meat in it. One of the best menswear brands, MJ Bale, has taken some of the wool from one of the trials, and we've received rave reviews from that. So, you know, if we can use it also in clothing, that's excellent. We hear about Ben and Jerry's and brands such as those in the US. So look, it's starting. It's becoming an actual commercial deal. So it's really happening. So it's gone beyond the science to becoming a reality. What our job now is to scale that up and push that out much more so that it becomes something that, you know, you wouldn't have a podcast on it in the future because it's sort of done. And now we're moving on to the next thing or the next enhancement or another thing you can also do. So, yeah, we're right at that phase now that we've got to find the tipping point where it's the tipping point to absolute success.
And so your role in all of this is kind of facilitating that growing process and then distributing it?
So obviously we license the discovery to a number of partners because, you know, it's not practical. We have taken a decision not to be the sole or a grower or a sole grower. So we've got an industry of people and partners that are growing the Asparagopsis, and they license that technology.
So this is part of how Future Feed functions as a company. While I can't give you any pricing, just know that the licensees pay royalties to Future Feed when they make any commercial sales of their Asparagopsis. The cost of the actual product is determined by growers and is expected to go down as it becomes popularized.
And we have a part of us that is responsible for the science, you know, continuing proving out the safety, the efficacy, the productivity gains that may be achieved through using Asparagopsis. We're also responsible for paving the way on regulatory approval around the world. And also, and really importantly, a global certification program, which we're calling Farm to Lower Methane, to ensure that high standards are upheld by those using the livestock feed. That's currently actually being piloted in Australia at the moment to create a system and a digital tool for measuring emissions that is very rigorous. So very excited about that. But when we think about paving the way sort of globally, what it's probably worth mentioning is that so far we've got regulatory approval for Asparagopsis to be fed to livestock in Australia, California, and the EU. And so there is more work to be done there, and it's one of our focus.
Reducing the number of cow burps goes beyond the obvious methane reduction benefits. In scientific trials with cows, they've been shown to gain more weight with the same amount of feed because they don't use as much energy passing all that gas. This is great for livestock farmers. There's another financial aspect to this fix where companies selling the items can claim, this is a low emissions product, and charge more. And please stick with me on this one, farmers and producers can actually monetize the reductions in emissions using these things called carbon credits. Now, this is a whole pile of worms, and since this episode isn't on vermicompost, I will spare you the bulk of it. But carbon credits are a permit or a certificate given to companies indicating how much of a greenhouse gas they can produce. Carbon credits are tradable and thus profitable, so companies emitting less carbon or methane can sell their carbon credits, and the companies emitting more greenhouse gases won't have to face the consequences of overproduction because they bought more credits. So this is seriously so strange and fascinating to me, like a whole other currency literally determining the fate of the world. I digress. I hope I didn't lose you on that one. Back to the main story.
So Future Feed is the pilot of this new Asparagopsis fleet, working to get growing partners involved, doing research, and getting approval in countries to have it become the norm. It seems like a no-brainer for farmers to adopt this, so why isn't it everywhere yet?
Yeah, I think like anything that is new is the education and a sense of urgency. So, you know, understandably, when anything comes involved with animal ethics and indeed safety to animals and to humans, there is a period of time in which you have to prove up the science, which we've been busily doing and with great success, and then you need to educate people. And so there's a change mindset that needs to occur as well. When you've always been doing it a certain way, you've got to get people to adopt new processes and new procedures, new discoveries. And to do that, you really need to educate them also as to the benefits. So I think like anything, the inertia sometimes is just a lack of understanding. And so there is just time required to prove, to teach, and to then allow people to go forth and change. And that can't just be done by us, as you might understand. It also needs regulation, pressure, incentive from governments. It also needs the willingness of consumers to insist on a safer product and a better world. One of the things I hope for your listeners to understand is that there are a lot of people in the world that rely on the livestock industry, right?
Right. Over a billion people rely on livestock for their livelihood.
So, you know, from prosperity and food security reasons, this solution also needs to come to fruition. You know, livestock provides protein and micronutrients to more than 830 million people, you know, so it would be ideal, really important to find a way to reduce the methane emissions from livestock so that indeed we can feed and, you know, help those in less fortunate situations than ourselves have security. So on so many levels, this is so important.
You are like the cow facts extraordinaire. I've never heard somebody be able to spew as many bovine facts.
I remember my daughter when she was 4 and she's now nearly 18. I was driving her to school. So that's, you know, this is 14 years ago, and she was learning about this at school in Australia. And she was saying, Mom, I learned about this cows. And I recall her talking about them farting. I was like, oh. And she said, well, I've got an invention. I'm going to put an ice cream container and I'm going to attach it to a cow's bottom. So I had gone on for many years believing in just from that moment on that it was actually cows farting that was the problem. So, you know, you may think I know something about cows now, but it's been a very fast learning curve by desire as I realized actually it's the burping that's significantly the problem. So it is amazing. It's important that all of us try to educate ourselves because obviously the planet will survive, not in the way that we're familiar with it, and we won't. So if we would like the planet to survive in a healthier way, we've just simply got to do more. And FutureFeed is one of the players that's trying to do its part.
I have a question about the transportation of the Asparagopsis. How does that work? Is the transportation contributing to emissions at all?
That is an excellent question. And I have been asked that about, does it need refrigerating, this, that, and the other? And listen, as much as I like to know things, I don't want to pretend to be an expert in the logistics side of it. Mm-hmm. But what I can tell you is absolutely. We also need to be thinking not only of the benefits we can by feeding this supplement, but what are all the components in the chain, including the logistics to get it to the animal, including the harvesting if it's in the oceans, including the on land if it requires electricity, etc. and so forth. So we are, all of that is being taken into account. So it is a very clever question. You're quite right that of course the logistics are incredibly important because you want to find to reduce that footprint as significantly as you can so that the net benefit is as high as possible. The great news is the recent, I believe it was the oil excipient, they call it. So the Asparagopsis oil, the exciting news there was that the shelf life stability is very good. So of course, if you can create a product that can be on the shelf for longer, that if you can create a product that doesn't need any particularly complicated refrigeration, and this is, you know, and this is where we are with Asparagopsis. So incredibly exciting again, because all of those, as you say, reduces the other emissions or the other negatives that come with the fact that you don't grow Asparagopsis or create it right next to the cow. So there is some form of logistics required, as with any, getting the feed to them in the first place. So we are, the industry in itself is very focused on how to reduce those costs, but it's key. It's a really important thing to have brought up. Thank you.
So despite that, you are still net positive as of now?
Oh, yes, okay. Significantly. But you know, as with anything, you have to keep your eye on that equation too, because you know, you don't want to see the wonderful benefits of this being eroded away by lazy thinking or lazy behavior elsewhere in the food chain. It doesn't help and it doesn't solve.
So FutureFeed is working to make the growing, harvesting, and shipping process better for the planet as well. How are they doing that?
When you start to look at growing, you know, when it doesn't have to be, you can be tank-based, for example, then there are great innovations happening around that. So not just growing in water that might need to be the right temperature, et cetera, or have the right, inverted commas, farming conditions that you don't create a significantly large footprint or destroy ocean beds, et cetera. When you start to be able to say, we can tank base and grow on land and create the own climate environment for that, you start to open up possibilities as well. And that's already well underway. So really very exciting, and certainly lots more innovation to come there. I know that some of our licensees have been working on their own innovations too, and I'm excited for them to reveal those over time.
That's wonderful. So you're working with the people who are actually holding the licenses to see the progression and the benefits too?
Each of them are allowed to innovate on, you know, whatever piece they want of creating this industry. An industry is being born, and we're not trying to control every piece of it, because we, you know, that's not sensible and won't be commercially the most efficient or accelerated way to success. So it's wonderful to see others innovate in and around what we have offered to try and find a better growing system or whatever it might be that they're trying to innovate. So yes, when they share those with them, which they regularly do, it's very exciting. Some of them are early stages. Some of them, I believe, are only months away from what could be really significant. And remember, as you know, with anything, when you're trying to change something, we need a win-win mindset. You know, there is competitive tension, which is good because that's obviously healthy to a degree, but there's also an understanding that this is such an enormous problem to solve that working together is the best way to get there.
I'd like to talk a little bit about you. How did you get into this industry? You said that you first learned about cow burps when your daughter was very young.
Well, when she misled me at the age of, when she was four, and I just believed a four-year-old.
So does that predate your...
Yes, my involvement has been fairly recent, maybe a little bit about me. So I had grown up in Australia in a seaside town. About the closest I ever got to owning, going to a farm was that I called my aunt and uncle, they were not really my aunt and uncle, but I adopted them as such. They owned a horse stud. And so I would be taken regularly to the country and spend time with them on their farm. So that was really my first connection to the land, given that I was a seaside girl. And then, you know, you grow up. I leave Australia. I've worked in London and New York and Japan and South Africa and lived in each of those continents as well. And most of my time was spent in financial services. And, you know, you realize the interlinkages of almost every industry when you do that. And I'd done some work at McKinsey. I'd worked there. And then I set up my own strategy and corporate advisory business with a co-founder. And we were across all sectors. And one sector we focused on very early was agriculture. But one thing, the company called Pottinger, that we went on to talk about was climate change. So 20 years ago, when we were saying climate change is a thing, Houston, we've got a problem. And we founded it in Australia, which was not exactly a climate change believer as a country. It was quite inconvenient because of the sorts of industry that made most of the money back then. So we were not speaking a popular talk, but we said we have to keep doing it because it matters. And because there is incredible potential, financial and otherwise, if people will embrace climate change solutions and build entities that are focused on that. But as with many things 20 years ago, we were effectively too early. But that gives you a little of an understanding that even 20 years ago, I was prepared to not make money. Indeed, I would say lose money by being unpopular and speaking of this thing called climate change. Roll forward now where it's not, you're no longer sort of seen as this awful person to be avoided who keeps talking about things that surely aren't true. And so when I had the opportunity to chair FutureFeed, you know, I sort of thought, well, this is just something that I have to, you know, I have to jump in with both feet and see if I can help. So yes, it's like anything. I don't believe that I'm a climate change expert like so many people that I admire. Relative to a lot of people, I'm well informed, but there are experts that I rely on have been talking about this for decades and decades and decades. And I, my hat off to them, and I'm so grateful. One day it would be too late to start, but right now it's not too late to start. If we can all do a little something, it's really, really important, whether it is as an individual or supporting the endeavors of a company like a FutureFeed. So that's a little bit about me. I have a sense of urgency. That's part of my brand, being daring and bold and brave and urgent and decent, and also realizing every so often I tumble and fall and disappoint even myself. So I have to get back up and try again.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, you're so very welcome, and thank you for inviting me, and all the very best to your listeners.
Wow, food fixers, I am so excited by this technology, and I will be inserting the word asparagopsis into every conversation I have in the next few weeks, so acquaintances beware. Humongous thank you to Cassandra. It was so nice speaking with you and hearing all your cow facts. Thank you, freezer bees. Bonus fact, bees are another creature with more than one stomach. They actually have two. And cows have four compartments. So I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little bit lame over here with just my one. Anyways, thank you to the Knight Center, a place with technically many stomachs because there are so many wonderful people working there. And thank you for learning with me, folks. Until next week, I've been your host, Anna Leonis.